Any comment, public comment on agenda items? Wait on public comment. Are there any modifications to the agenda? Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda is approved. Are there any conflicts of interest to disclose? Seeing none, now is there any public comment? Go ahead and come up, Dave.
Yeah, I'm the first one on the list anyway, that's okay. Dave Henry, Bainbridge Island. I just want to verify something about the agenda, actually. And I have a question, if you don't mind indulging me. But is M&E Trees not on the agenda? I didn't see it on the net. Is it going to be discussed tonight?
On tonight's agenda.
Okay, thank you. And that clears that one up. Probably come up next week then, maybe. And I have just a quick question. I spent the last month of my life applying for a grant, and it has something to do with Bainbridge Island, but it's not for Bainbridge Island. But I'm just curious if you would indulge me with a little vote. It could be a wink or a flip of your finger or something. Have any of you heard about that grant yet? Okay, great. Thanks. I'm just tracking the trickle-up theory. And by the way, your clock is crooked. No relationship to anything else. Okay, thank you.
Mike, do you want to comment now or when we talk about critical areas? Patty?
Because I'm concerned about a number of things. Patty Drzbobic from Holly Lane Gardens. When the council talks about their concern about promoting farming, and the first thing you put on the list that you plan to destroy is a farmer's market, when none of you had anything to do with that property being set aside for us, it is the equivalent of a theft. And how you can hold your heads up and say, we support farming when you're doing that, I have no idea. I have the blueprint here, and I'm going to set it back there for people to see, where the farmer's market space was dedicated to the market. And Doug Schultz knows this because he held up this blueprint, so I couldn't get it for 2 years. It says here on this blueprint, and it shows the whole complex here with City Hall, with BPA, with the Historic Museum, and it goes back to something like 1998, September 11th. So Doug Schultz has nothing that even begins to compete with the years that this blueprint did the farmers market space, and how you as council people can allow this man to come in 20 years after the fact and erase that commitment to the market is beyond me, because what he is doing is showing his contempt for the decision of an earlier council, and there's no way around that. And why you would allow that and then try to tell me that you support farming because you support the illegal organization called Friends of the Farm, which can't even be a valid 501c3. And I don't doubt for a minute that you all are aware of that because you're trying to put it under the Trust for Working Landscapes. And in the state of Washington, you cannot have two organizations that use the same 501c3 number. And you've got people sitting there who represent nonprofits. So I don't know what you people are doing. You expect us as citizens to respect your decision making when you're not doing legal things. You're promoting whatever you want to do. Well, I know I'm limited, but I'm leaving documents back here, and people are welcome to pick them up.
Good
Just like to respond briefly to that last public comment. Ms. Dzbavic has been told many times from this podium by other colleagues of mine, and I need to join in the chorus because apparently the message has not been received. And I want the public to be fully aware that during my 3 years on council, not a single council member has ever suggested anything that would eliminate or reduce the farmers market's use of space in Town Square. The only ideas that have been floated have been about increasing it, possibly. Ms. Dzbavic is misrepresenting the proposals that have been placed, either inadvertently or not. But she keeps doing it after having been told repeatedly from this podium that there is no such proposal contemplated. And I have to add that, and I'm emphatic about it. I think it's actually not a proper topic of public comment because it's been repeated over and over again, and it's false.
Patty was the last one to sign up besides Mike. Is there anyone else who wants to comment at this time?
Okay. If you're saying I can make a comment, absolutely I'd like to make.
No, Patty. I was seeing if anyone else that hadn't signed up wanted to make a comment.
Could you repeat that?
I was seeing if anybody out there who had not signed up wanted to comment. Okay. Item 3A. Is that you, Doug? Oh, Barry.
Good evening, Council. Barry Loveless, Public Works Director. This item is for the Downtown Parking Study Professional Services Agreement, Amendment Number 1, and Budget Amendment. So we've gone through the scoping phase with the firm Framework Cultural Placemaking, who is the consultant on this. They've developed a scope of work to complete the study, which includes additional data collection on weekdays and weekends, existing conditions, reviewing our current parking policies, regulations, enforcements, etc., looking at alternatives on street usage, circulation patterns, doing analysis of those things, coming up with some parking strategies and a plan, having public outreach to get public input on strategies developed, and then a management reserved that would only be exercised to look further at the Town Square parking garage possibility, should that be identified as something to pursue later on. So there's a reserve for that, but that work is not guaranteed in this project unless the city exercises that option at a later date. So the total cost for this phase two study is $83,179, including project expenses, with the $10,000 reserve for the further study.
Anyone have any questions for Barry? Is there any public comment on this item?
I'm still baffled why you're doing another parking study, as you have at least, I think, three parking studies on the Town Square homepage.
Mm-hmm. Can you give your name for the record?
I'm sorry. Brandon Fouts, up on High School Road here in Bainbridge Island. So there's three parking studies that are already on the Town Square project on the website, and I don't know why you don't just review those. I'd also like to go back to when we had the federal money, PSRC, WashDOT, the ferry system, Bainbridge Island, involved in the ferry terminal upgrade back in the early 2000s. And I think the formal plan was maybe presented about 2006. And they talked about building a parking garage underneath the existing parking space over there by the ferry terminal. Which still seems like a very logical thing to do, because someday in the future we may have extra ferries and could use that parking over there. When I come into town, I don't have that much trouble finding a parking place, but I admit I don't drive my car very often into town. But I don't understand why, when we went through the same parking studies for Winslow Way improvement, probably about three times, and yet when we finally did the Winslow Way improvement, we took away about 25% of the parking places. If you need that space back, undo those plants that are planter boxes that are along there, and you'll get another 25% parking along Winslow Way. And I don't know why we encourage city employees to park around the building here when we should maybe be encouraging city employees to use public transport or to at least carpool here into the city to work. My employers never provided me with parking, but maybe I was just unfortunate not to work for more generous employers. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Barry, I have a question. Can you remind me what the original contract we approved? I know it was broken down into these two different parts. What was that first part for?
That was to, I don't have it with me right here, so I'd be talking off the top of my head. I don't know if, Doug, you remember some of that?
They did some data collection on parking inventory and also put together the, based on that, in the RFP, put together the scope of work.
So, okay, because that's what I recall was data collection. So I'm just wondering, are they doing more data collection? Because that's a big chunk of the scope of work.
Yeah, the initial data collection was more of an inventory of existing spaces. This next phase is actually doing license plate inventory where they'll go out and look at how vehicles are moving around, if you know how long a vehicle is staying in a parking space, and do a more extensive data collection.
And then my other question, with the parking strategies, I know I've asked this before, they're not just going to be looking at a parking garage, right? Okay.
Right.
Mike?
Yeah, I remain in favor of this. There are three parking studies referenced as one public comment suggested. One is an Anthony Gibbons parking study that's from 2002, 15 years ago, that concluded at that time that there was a significant deficit in downtown available parking and recommended immediate action. Again, in 2007, there was a study and recommended action. The Great Recession hit. Those plans were scuttled along with other plans. Here we are in 2017. There's a perception among many in the downtown business community and other citizens on the island that there is an issue. But I think as a council, we feel the responsible thing to do is to assess the current issue, not to rely on something that's 15 years old or even only 10 years old. 10 years is a long time. In order for this council and for the public to make informed decisions, we need valid scientific as it can be, information. And that's what hopefully this study would achieve. So I'm in favor of it.
I just have a question. I noticed that the potential motion for this refers to moving this to the August 22nd consent agenda. Is there a reason why we can't move it to next week's consent agenda?
We just usually go business meeting to business meeting with these type of actions.
And there's not a consent agenda for the study sessions.
Right.
Next week's the study session. Okay. That's right. This is. Yeah. It could go to.
Oh. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. If the council wishes, it could go next week.
Any other questions, comments?
Yeah, I'll just add one other thing in response to the public comment.
Oh, that's right.
this parking study is going to feed into a task force the city has created to look at the Town Square project and non-motorized transportation around the island, and the purpose of that task force is to bring back to council a proposal for the Town Square project that might or might not involve parking garage, and how to combine that, or a proposal for how to combine that with non-motorized transportation improvements all in one ballot measure. So this parking study feeds into that, and I think that as part of that committee, that task force's work, employee parking, I think, is one of the issues that can be, and I think will be part of the discussion of a potential parking structure. I just wanted to respond to that.
Okay. Is there there a motion?
I move to forward to the August 22, 2017 consent agenda amendment number one to the professional services agreement with Framework Cultural Placement, which increases the current contract by $93,179, including an associated budget amendment in the same amount from the contingency fund.
I would second with the amendment of a week earlier on the... I'm sorry, I don't have the date.
August 8th.
August 8th. Okay.
Okay.
I second.
So it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Motion passes 4-1. Okay. Mid-year financial report.
Good evening, Council. Ellen Schroer, Finance Director. I am here for the second of our annual, second quarterly report of the year. Tonight, we'll take a look at the mid-year financial performance and forecast. There's some information in your packet, and I have a short presentation. I encourage you to stop me if you have any questions along the way. We'll also take a quick look at the fall timeline and when we'll be talking about 2018 budget. New this year, we are working on providing you with some better capital project reporting, and the Public Works Director will speak to a select number of our capital projects. These reports were included in the packet and in your report, but Barry is here to provide some additional information. And then the next item is the mid-year budget adjustments or amendments. If after the report you still want more, there I wanted to highlight these for you and for people who are listening. The OpenGov portal is available on the city website. We update this monthly with all the financial information that we have in our financial system. Some of the reports or some of the charts that are in the presentation from tonight are from that system, and it's a great way for people who want more information to look into our city finances. We also have the priority-based budgeting program inventory tool. We'll be using that more this fall to help with our budget discussions. And then I wanted to refer back to the property tax discussion we had last week. We have some information that we'll be posting along with the update that Councilmember Blossom had requested on the issued but not. You asked us if we could add information about authorized but not issued bonds for other districts. And so we've gathered that information and we'll add that to that report for people to see. Looking first at the tax-supported funds, which are the general fund, streets, building and development services, and REIT, through the first half of 2017, we are at or ahead of budget with our revenues performing about as we'd estimated and our expenditures either at or below the budgeted levels. That, coupled with the stronger-than-estimated 2016 performance, means that we expect to end the year with our fund balances at or higher than the budgeted levels. Looking first at revenue, this is a chart that came from OpenGov and shows our four biggest tax-supported funds. The large blue bar is the general fund on the top. And this chart shows the first half of the year for each of the last eight financial years, so June 2010 through through 17, so the first 6 months of each of the years, and shows the revenue pattern for each of those years. For 2017, we're at about $12.5 million, or 55% of budget for the revenue for these funds together. You can see one thing that is interesting to note here is the relative volatility, or the yellow bar, which is the real estate excise tax, changes more than the other funds. So you can we've discussed that before. A couple of revenues that we like to draw your attention to are sales and use tax. This is a significant revenue for us and also one that's variable. You can see in this chart the various lines for the last 5 years, with the highest blue line representing 2017. We are just ahead of half of budget for the year, so the revenue is performing pretty much according to plan, and we're about 13% higher than each of the months for 2016, which is shown by the purple line. As is typical for us, the two largest contributors to sales tax revenue are retail trade and construction, shown in the blue pie slices. This is just 2017, but if you moved the slider in OpenGov, you could see a pretty similar pie for each of the years for which there's information. And between retail trade and construction, that accounts for roughly two-thirds of the revenue of sales tax. And the last revenue source that I wanted to highlight for you is REIT. You can see, again, that we have some pretty typical seasonality for this. We can see year over year that it's about the same. The dark blue line represents 2017, and it's been both lower and higher than previous years. But through the first half of the year, we're at about $1.5 million, which is close to 60% of our revenue estimate. So this revenue source is performing a little better than we had anticipated. Turning to expenditure, and again, looking at the chart from OpenGov for the last five years and the first half of each of those years, this chart shows us that we've spent about $8.5 million through these four funds, the tax-supported funds for operating and capital expenses, which is about $8.4 million or just over 40% of our budget. Underspending this year is due to some vacant positions, some delay in professional services, and major maintenance that will happen in the second half of the year. You can see by looking at that chart, our expenditure patterns are mostly consistent with roughly two-thirds of our expenditures on personnel, the top two bars in the past in the chart. Two things that are different this year that I wanted to draw your attention to is that we budgeted a contingency line item this year, so we've appropriated that item. You've now spent roughly a third of it on the parking study. And we also made a decision to move all of the general fund support for capital projects into the capital construction fund at the beginning of the year. This has the effect of moving that cash, and so the general fund balance no longer contains cash for 2017 general fund projects. You'll see that in a minute. Looking at our three utility funds, we are seeing revenue at planned level for these funds, with expenditures close to budget, with the exception of some position vacancies and some delay to capital projects, which again leaves us with a year-end forecast showing at or higher than budgeted levels for those funds. These are a little harder to see, but I wanted to show again that you can take a look at the OpenGov portal can give you some information. Here you can see the three lines for the utility funds, at least I hope you can. The top blue line is the sewer utility, with that bump in the middle representing some loan revenue in 2015, and then storm and surface water and water utility with the lowest of the three revenues. When I was looking at this, I had expected to see the surface and stormwater utility go up more because of the rate increase that was passed for this year. And so to look at that, I made one more chart to show that the top line, which is the charges for services, does indeed increase in 2017, but there's an offsetting decrease in intergovernmental revenue, which is grant revenue from the state that is no longer available. So the revenue is pretty much flat in total, but the charges for service revenue did go up this year. And looking at the expenditures, again, these are close to budget for the funds. They're relatively consistent. These do include capital, so you can see the bump for water and sewer last year, which is the Wing Point Way capital project. Looking towards the end of the year for the general fund, we are estimating that we'll end the year with about $13.3 million. These are our first look at our cash balance forecast, so we'll continue to track these and bring you more information through the rest of the year. That total does include all the policy reserves and support for the 2018 approved CIP. If you take a look at each of those parts, the total of 13.3 includes roughly $5.7 million, which are the policy reserves, and about $500,000 of money that's set aside for other purposes, such as public art, the PEG money, and public safety funds. So if you back that out, you're at about 7.7, and we currently have $1.7 million in the 2018 CIP. Looking ahead, we'll be back to talk with you in September about utility rates. We have started this conversation internally and with the UAC, so we'll bring you their thinking and ours in September. That's the beginning of the budget process for this fall, and then in October and November, we'll continue the operating and capital budget discussions with the aim that you'll adopt the property tax levy and any modifications to the 2018 adopted budget by the end of November. At this point, I'm happy to take any questions, and Barry is also here to step through the capital projects.
Any questions?
I don't have a question. Well, actually, I do have a question, but first I just wanted to thank you for this wonderful report. I read it all. I appreciated your report tonight. You actually had some kind of new breakdowns in there, so it wasn't everything that was in the memo, so thank you. Way at the end of the report, there was a memo from Morgan about surplus real property. I had a question about that. Should I go ahead and ask you, or is Morgan going to come up later?
I don't believe she... We don't have a presentation plan, but if there's any questions, I'm sure she'd be happy to address them.
I'm ready.
Great. Thank you. I just noticed that this property on Lovegren Road says the city determined to retain for spoils disposal, so the surplus resolution should be rescinded. Mm-hmm. So we should go ahead and do that.
Yeah, that's a piece of housekeeping that's on our list. A lot of the surplus property work we focused on was trying to move ahead the park district transfers. This is a property that didn't transfer as originally intended, so we've kept it. So we should probably clean up the surplus resolution that indicates that we're going to transfer it, since we aren't any longer. While we're talking about that property, I will say that in the past year, because we've changed the path for it, which is going to seem like a bad pun, our O&M crew has just recently gone out and recreated the trail that was there and is now maintaining it as part of the city's trail network. Because it was on a plan to transfer to parks, there were many years when parks was maintaining that trail. Once we switched our approach, they of course were no longer available to do the maintenance, and we've now picked that up. So I hope people who are interested in the property will go out, because it's now accessible and walkable.
So this is the property all the way at the end of Lovegren.
It's in the middle of Lovegren, actually, between Miller and 305. And it was formerly referred to as the Lovegren Pit. And I'm working hard to, we learned as part of our real estate investigation, Lovegren was just a typo. It's actually supposed to be Lovegreen. And its pit is sort of an unlovely word for a wooded path site. So we're working on perhaps Lovegren Woods or something like that. But we're open to suggestions.
I like that. I've been on that trail. It's great. It's a great connector through there.
Yeah.
The next or two down on that list, Pritchard Park, three parcels. It says, following a boundary line adjustment, the city will transfer one of the parcels to the Parks District, and that's in process. But the city is going to retain the second parcel with the water take and retain the third parcel during the EPA site cleanup. So does that mean we're retaining the parcel that is the hazardous waste site?
For the time being, the Park District is not available to take ownership of that property, given that the cleanup is still ongoing. So for the time being, we'll continue to own it. We also determined that it makes best sense for us to keep a very small parcel on the south side of the road, because it has our water tank and it has no usefulness for the Park District. So that's that third. The boundary line adjustment, though, kind of redrew those lines. But we've transferred what makes sense for parks to have for now, and we still have responsibilities while the Superfund site cleanup is going on. And once that's complete, maybe there'll be a different discussion.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Is there any public comment? Okay. Thank you, Ellen. I just want to. Are we doing budget adjustments now? Or you're still on?
We're going to walk through. We're going to walk through the capital project updates, which informs a couple of the budget adjustments that are on Ellen's list that you haven't heard of, that you haven't heard about yet. So that way, you'll have the background information before Ellen comes back and talks about them in the context of all the budget adjustments. So, I should make that a little bigger. So, one of the work plan items this year for Public Works and Finance was to provide more capital reporting to City Council. So, this is a sample of projects that are active. So, active means they're either in design, in construction, or maybe just finishing construction, and gives an update on the status financially. Course, as well as just a little bit of information on project status as far as completion. The first one is the city dock replacement. We awarded that contract for construction earlier this year. Right now we're in review of contractor submittals and procurement of long lead items, which are the dock floats. So we pushed out the actual mobilization until after Labor Day, which will coincide with some of the long lead material delivery, which will still allow completion of the work by the end of the year. That project, of course, it hasn't really started construction-wise yet. We still have some contingency there, $185,000. So right now, we're in pretty good shape financially on that because Council authorized additional funds at award. The police and court facility, we're doing the advanced site analysis right now. It's on City Council agenda for next week to look at the results of the site analysis, as well as provide order of magnitude cost estimates for the alternatives on that site for construction. So there'll be some new updated cost information as well as site information next week on that project. This project, the waterfront park improvements, is essentially done. There's still some punch list items, as well as continuing service required by the contractor to ensure plant establishment, replace plants that have not survived, as well as maintain the beds and the grass for a year. So that's ongoing. But as the part of the project, we've finalized all the change orders. It took some time for the contractor to get us all the cost information and to negotiate them. So we're requesting a budget amendment, which is the highlighted yellow, for $30,000 to finish up all the change orders on the contract. And like I said, there'll still be warranty service continuing on for a year, or approximately a year, for when they finished. So that's one of the budget amendments that will be on Ellen's sheet later. The SR 305 Olympic Drive non-motorized project, as you recall, I'm sure it's got a lot of history there. You can see a lot of individual actions as far as budget amendments and scope changes and whatnot. But we had a bid that came in too high, so we're in the process of working with the Washington State Department of Transportation to repackage and try to relieve some of the restrictions on the construction operations. We've already provided our input to WashDOT. We're hoping to get some favorable response that we can work with and potentially add into our contract to make it more feasible and less expensive and risky for potential bidders. So we plan to rebid that job later this year. There's also some opportunities now that we're in a little bit of a delay to pursue more grant opportunities. So we have a couple grant applications we're putting in. There's a transportation alternatives program, which was just announced by Puget Sound Regional Council this week. Applications are due in September. Funds are available as early as February, which would be in our potential construction window. So we're going to apply for that. There's also Transportation Improvement Board funds available, or a grant program that's available that we can apply for. These are competitive programs, so there's no guarantee, of course. And then there's also some potential to get additional funds from our current grant, which is also from the state bike ped program. And so we're going to pursue that too. So now that, you know, I guess good and bad, we have a little bit of delay, but I think we have opportunity to maybe plus it up and get closer to the full scope of the contract or the project, because the response so far is there doesn't seem to be interest in really cutting scope. We'd like to get the whole project as designed. So we'll see if we can get some more money to get us closer to that budget-wise. Am I following these correctly? Okay, so phase two on Olympic Drive, Sound Olympics Trail, phase two and four, which is currently under construction along Highway 305. Construction was going well until we got to the pile driving. If you've noticed, the crane has been out there for kind of an extended period of time. We were hoping it would be gone by now. So when they drove the piles a couple weeks ago, they have to do a test for pile refusal, basically make sure that they hit a layer that would provide the level of structural support. After doing the testing and the structural and geotechnical engineer and analysis, we're going to have to do some more extra pile driving on almost half of the piles, unfortunately, which means bringing in another piece and pounding down a little bit more depth. So we're in a little bit of a delay on that. It's going to be some extra cost, as well as the delay is because it's a federal-funded project. So it's a Buy American Act, so they're having a little bit of trouble finding timely delivery of the steel, American steel, but they're working on that, and we hope to get that going again in another couple weeks. So we're kind of in a period now where I know the crane is kind of in the way, but it costs a lot of money to demobilize it versus just to keep it on standby. So we're trying to balance that based on when we think the piles will get here. So we have that additional cost, as well as some additional quantity adds. And when this contract is in the WSDOT right away. It's a federal job, so it's done in accordance with WSDOT specs. So there are bid items in the contract that are basically estimates as far as how much things like how much material do you have to haul off-site, how much rock do you have to haul on-site, how much asphalt, how much is borrow versus how much is backfill. All those things are estimated based on the design, but then they're paid based on actual quantities of trucks leaving the site. So we get tickets from the trucks to verify that, and some of the quantities have gone over just based on the actual work. So we're asking for a $150,000 budget amendment. As you recall, this project was awarded without any contingency, so we have roughly $33,000 in balance, and we're asking for another $150,000 to make sure we have enough to cover these changes. Questions? Okay. And then Sound Olympics Trail Phase 3. This is the bridge across the highway at Vineyard to Nectal Way. There was a public meeting last week here, well attended, lots of input to the design team. So we're proceeding on with looking at options for the location, as well as the ramping on either side of the bridge, potential bridge. So there's a design contract that has been awarded, and we're in design feasibility and stage. So there's been a public meeting, and we'll continue on with developing alternatives and reviewing those with the public and council.
Barry?
Yes.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
During the presentation and on the project page for the STO3, the bridge project, there are some pictures of bridges. And it...
Where was this?
There's pictures of...
On the website, you're saying?
Yeah, on the project page.
Okay.
And they were shown during the presentation.
Right.
The bridge that we're potentially going to build there is going to be covered with some kind of something to keep objects from being thrown or people from jumping off. There's been comments from citizens that the bridges that were shown are not representative of the kind of bridge we're going to be building. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it'd be possible for us to get a picture or two of something that's going to be more similar to what was probably going to be designed for that application.
Well, that was part of the, that was kind of the main objective of the meeting, was to try to get some feedback. And those, I think those, I know those example bridges were intended to show a variety of things to provoke some thought and input from the public. Did they want something that was more artistic and modernistic, maybe? Did they want something more natural? Did they want something more structural, or just to try to get a feel for community consensus on what type of bridge the community would be in favor of. I'm not sure we got clear consensus, but I think probably some of the ones you're thinking about, the modern artistic ones at the beginning, seem to be the less favorable received and less...
Are examples of bridges over highways in Washington State that, right, that follow the specifications that are required by the state. It might be helpful to have a couple of pictures of those, like the interurban. Mm-hmm. There's a bridge that's part of the interurban trail. Mm-hmm. And so that would be my request.
Okay. Any other? Okay. See, Wyatt Way reconstruction. This is going to be a significant project next year, we hope. So we're in design. We're 60% design. And we now have enough information that we're able to approach the property owners, adjacent property owners, with right-of-way acquisition offers. So that's something we haven't really had to do much in recent years, is actually purchase right-of-way and negotiate with adjacent property owners. We've been typically able to live within our right-of-way, but not we won't be able to on this project. So those offers and estimates are going out soon, and there'll be some interaction with the public on that, so in case you hear anything about that. But design is pretty far along. Now we need to acquire right-of-way and finish up design and try to get to bid next year. Sportsman Club. Oh, I'm sorry, what's the next one? Wardwell? Okay. So Wardwell, this is the repaving of Wardwell, basically, as well as replacing the culvert for the stream that goes underneath. That project is completely designed and on the street. So we're hoping to get bids next week and bringing results to council soon thereafter. Core 40 Miller Road, also under design. Planned to be at construction in 2018, and it's well along in design, so no right-of-way required as far as acquisition. We're actually working right now on getting our environmental permits in, because there'll be some adjacent wetland impacts along the road.
Hey, Barry?
Yes.
On that one, I think we had inquired about whether it could be designed in maybe a more innovative way that would allow for more of those trees to be kept along the roadway as it goes through the Grand Forest.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember in this discussion at all?
I don't recall for sure, but I understand the discussion.
I guess we were kind of asking, you know, does it just have to be that you go along and widen the road the same amount, you know, on one side, or can we kind of widen the other side where there's a significant tree and just kind of move the lines? I mean,
look at that. It's possible that, you know, the there's already some shoulder on the west side, I guess, in different places, as well as the power line runs up the west side. So we have to be careful about that. And then we also have to obviously maintain roadway geometry so that it's your curves are for the speed as specified. But now that we're close enough or far enough along in design, I think we have a pretty good idea what trees are possibly going to be impacted, so we can look at which ones, if there's any mitigation that could be done. So you're thinking just swerve the road over mainly.
I'm not a road designer. I don't know. But
that would be the easiest thing. I mean, the cheapest thing, because if we try to swerve the trail over or the shoulder, that's awful hard, because we're just building a shoulder and not really a trail. And if you make it a trail, it's much more expensive. And actually, you're further into the trees anyway, probably.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it. I'm just hoping some thought can be given to that.
Sure.
So, Barry?
Yes.
I don't see that. Is that on the project page?
It should be. Core 40 Miller Road. lot of projects on there, but I'm sure it would be on.
Let's see there. Maybe it's... Yeah, I'm looking at the city website. Could you describe to us just in general what it's going to look like?
It's basically a five-foot shoulder on the both sides of the road from approximately Tolo up to just north of Cora. Isn't that what it is?
Yeah. So we're not talking about anything like the impact that we saw with the...
No, because it's attached to the road, so it's not a separated trail. It's only 5 feet, but as Councilmember Medina pointed out, there's some big trees that are right on the edge of the road there, so if you go another foot, you're into them. That's the problem on this one, but we're not going to be cutting a big swath of trees, but there are selective trees that are less than 5 feet from the edge.
You can probably tell which ones those are if we just go up there and ride along the road or walk along.
Probably, because if you just take the fog line and say, what's 5 feet from the fog line right now, since we have even zero or maybe a one-foot shoulder in a lot of the area there, anything within 5 feet of that fog line is potentially in the removal zone.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Madrona Townhouses Henshaw Sewer. So this one, this is the project that's been impacting us here in the parking lot as well as up on Madrona Lane for a number of months. So this is one that I have highlighted for a budget amendment. We estimated $135,000. We're asking for a budget amendment of $100,000, hoping that will be more than enough to cover what's going on. It's all from the sewer fund. The impacts have been, if you recall the project, it's to reduce the sewer on Madrona all the way through the mobile home park and then down here all the way out to Madison, as well as down to almost to the second of the two city lots. There's been a lot of impacts out there. The work went really slow because we just kept finding unforeseen conditions. Starting at Madison mainly, there was a lot of impact with the electric fault, the existing storm and sewer lines and other impacts, so we had to go a lot deeper there. It took a while to figure that out. Then we've got into this area. There's a lot of impacts from the performing arts as well as a big stormwater vault up here, and so we've got it worked out, but it's going to be more expensive and it's taken a lot longer, and so this is a requested budget amendment to try to get this project completed. And then the last one I think on the project sheets is the Ravine Creek outfall. So this is a stormwater outfall in Ravine Creek, kind of right below Winslow Way. It really takes a large area of drainage. So really, if you think about it, it takes all the way up 305, including our new trail. It takes care of most of Cave, including the existing harbor steps and the new Bainbridge Landing project. That whole basin ends up going down into this one pipe, which is now undersized, as well as it's inadequate. Those projects have depended on the project being the outfall pipe being a direct discharge to marine waters, and it actually doesn't extend to the tide line. So this project will upsize and extend the pipe so it does discharge into tidal waters and not into the side of the ravine. So that's under design now and currently going through some environmental permitting review, and we'll be advertising and trying to get that work done as soon as that's over. Potentially, though, depending on the delay or the time it takes to do permitting, it could be a springtime project next year. And this is a storm. Yes. Yes.
Regarding the outfall pipe, so it's collecting water from the highway in part.
In part.
Is there any treatment of that water before it goes?
Not on the highway. There is on our trail that we're putting in, because that's required of our project.
So we're basically just getting runoff from the road with oil and different things that's right. Going to be going through there.
Yeah, not all the road. I think there's some runoff from the road that goes directly to the ravine higher up, of course. But the runoff that it was in the pipe system, like I said, from the Cave area, as well as what we're putting in for the trail, all ends up in that pipe.
Would there be any opportunities in the future to install any kind of stormwater, any features that would mitigate for quality, improve the quality of that stormwater before it goes into the saltwater?
Well, the newer developments do have to do that. So like the Bainbridge Landings and of course our project, I think the new the Teresi cul-de-sac project up there. So you get relief from quantity or stormwater quantity control by doing direct discharge. You still have to do treatment. But the road, the highway, there's no requirement for them to do any retrofit for treatment at this point in time.
But if we wanted to in the future budget something to retrofit that drainage?
We could, yes, there? We could. I mean, that gets back to what we'll be talking about soon about stormwater funds and rates and whether and capital programs. So we have a, you know, we have a capital program in stormwater that really right now is kind of limited to things that that we think are more problematic. And there's really not a lot of projects that are retrofit. Although we've looked at Springbrook Creek and some things like that, trying to pursue grants and potentially we could do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So that's the capital program update. Unless there's any more questions, but I'll still be here with Ellen. Okay, thanks.
Is there any public comment? Well, Charles? Okay.
My name is Charles Schmidt with ABC. I was curious, I hear all these numbers for worrying about sewer and water and so on. How much is due to the growth, to the large number of residences that are being put in here, and how much does the city put in, and how much do we look at concurrency, that word that's always in the comp plan but never carried out? So I guess I can't ask questions, but I hope you look into where this money is allocated and how much is due to a certain project, and how much should the development pay versus how much should the city pay, which the city being us paying our taxes. Thank you.
I'm Brandon Fouts from High School Road. Yeah, if the developer's gonna put 48 units up there, I think he should handle some of the cost for tying into the sewer system. So I hope you're getting a fair share from the developer up there and not putting all the burden on the taxpayers. Also, I'd like to be reminded of Sarah Blossom's comment about what's the difference on the bridge going across 305. What's the difference to walk up the High School Road a half a mile or down to Winslow Way half a mile, or to cross a bridge and walk up a half a mile to Safeway or half a mile down to Winslow Way? I figure the difference is probably about 1/5 of a mile, because you'll have to walk up to the bridge and across and back down again. So the entrance coming up and going down is about 1,000 feet, which is about 1/5 of a mile. I don't think people are going to go out of their way to walk an extra 1/5 of a mile to use that bridge. So I'm still against the bridge and would like you to consider that. And then the ferry situation, a simple solution would be to let all the cars off the ferry first. We now have a policeman that Kitsap County is paying money for to make sure that the buses get out of the ferry terminal without getting bogged down in traffic. If you could figure out a way to get the cars through that first traffic light and then let all the bicyclists and motorcycles off, they wouldn't have traffic to deal with down there. And it would be a lot safer for them and safer for the pedestrians as well. Also, if the pedestrians could get off the ferry and be able to go to either the left side or the right side of the road without having to all go to the right side of the road and then cross the road, that would cut down their exposure of crossing the highway as well. Thank you.
Patty Dzbobic, one of the things I miss from the financial document is the number of agreements, contracts that have been made where the city is committed to paying off land. I'd really like to see the second agreement where the $8 million for Friends of the Farm was renegotiated, what the percent was, how much of that has been paid, and how or when that is going to be remedied, because I never see that set out in the documents, and I think that's very important. Now, I don't know if there are other commitments that the city has made that are hanging over the citizens' head, but I think that there should be a list of those listed so that the citizens know what our total commitment is for finances.
Is there any other public comment?
So my recollection of when we discussed the Madrona townhome, the sewer upgrade, Barry, I'm sure you can answer this. Part of the contribution was from the developer, if I understand.
Right, that there was a contribution from the developer of Rosebud 2 up on Madrona, as well as the developer of the townhouse project.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Now, are we doing budget adjustments?
Yes, please. All right. The next part of this is our quarterly budget amendments, and this is a compilation of some items that you've discussed before and a couple that Barry just introduced to you. The first four are changes to capital projects. The City Dock and Olympic Drive projects are discussions that you previously had. The dock project was subsequent to the award of the contract. And the Olympic Drive project, the council made a decision in June to add $120,000 to that project budget. So we've preserved that decision in these budget amendments, although later than that, you had another discussion and decided to rebid the project. So I just want to make you aware that that $120,000 is still there and represents an increase to the project budget, but we are still working on rescoping that. Barry just spoke to the next two items, the $150,000 for STO Phase 2 and 4 and Waterfront Park. Other funds, capital projects are the Waypoint Art Project. We discovered at the end of the processing that we had overlooked paying sales tax as the vendor was from out of state and hadn't added that, but the city is still on the hook to pay that sales tax, so we are increasing the budget to take care of that obligation. We just spoke about the Henshaw Way, our Madrona Townhome Sewer Project. There are some very small items at the end of the Rockaway Beach outfall, which require just a small budget amendment to cover those. And the last project is not an increase to overall spending, but an acceleration, moving the high zone water improvement projects from 2018 into 2017. So this just anticipates starting that project a year earlier than we had originally planned. And then the final two amendments are, one, the acceptance of the emergency preparedness grant from the Rotary Club, and a small transfer of budget authority for a project here in City Hall, which we inadvertently put in the wrong fund. So that last one doesn't represent an increase in spending, just the fund from which it is being spent. Are there any questions?
Ellen, the parking study was not a budgeted expense, was it? But it wasn't a budget amendment? Wouldn't it be in here?
Thank you for asking that question. You made the decision to fund that from your contingency fund, which is already part of the budgeted spending for the city. So what we'll be doing is moving that from the city council department budget, or the city council budget where it is right now, into the public works department so that Barry can manage that contract. So you initially had moved $25,000, had approved $25,000 of spending, and tonight you made an additional approval, so it doesn't increase overall city spending, it just counts against that $300,000 contingency line in your budget.
Thank you.
Ellen?
Yes.
So all the projects Barry went through,
yes,
they're not all on here, right? Because they didn't all require budget amendments.
That's correct.
We chose those projects as sort of high profile and projects that were representative of the work that we're doing right now. And I'd appreciate any feedback you have on that format, because we're still working on developing it, but we are really attempting to provide more timely capital project information to you and to the community. And this is our first iteration of that. So as you review it, if there's things that you'd like to see differently or more or less of, I'd be really happy to get that feedback. And then I can work with Barry to make some, you know, to provide that information.
Wayne?
I like the format. It reflects how we see the CIP document. It adds a little more detail, but it's pictures are always great, and illustrations, and the way it differentiates between funds, grants, and others I like very much. I'm prepared to make a motion. I move that the City Council forward to the August 8th 2017 Consent Agenda Ordinance 2017-19, amending the 2017 adopted budget.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Morgan.
Good evening, Council. Continuing your look at where we are as of mid-year, you have in your packets our mid-year reporting on the work plan priorities and the status of those after the first two quarters, and also our performance metrics. And I thought I would just take you through some of that information at a high level, and maybe with a little bit different perspective than how we usually do this. If you do have any questions about what's in the packet or those reports, please feel free to let me know. As I said, tonight we're going to look at the work plan priorities and also the metrics, and then touch a little bit on what the year-end reporting is going to look like. If you look at work plan status, I want to remind the folks watching from the community that these are priorities that we work with Council to identify in January. It's important to do that because it helps us together organize how we're going to use our limited resources. We have a lot of important things to work on, and a lot of great ideas for new initiatives, and unfortunately we don't have enough time or people to do all of those things. So we try to collect our thoughts about the things that are most important, the things that must happen, the things we hope will happen, and we always try and capture a set of ideas under best management practices, because those are things that may not be at the top of the minds of the community or even the council, but they help us commit to constantly improving the way we do our work and moving the organization forward. So that category is very important to us, and I want to make sure people don't misunderstand it as a low priority third category. I really appreciate the council's willingness to spend time on this, both at the beginning of the year and at mid-year, because I think having this habit of talking about what we said we were going to work on and then checking in on it helps with accountability. Very much so, I see it internally, but also with the community and council, so that we know where we're at and what things we got to and how they're moving and what things we didn't and why. If you look at the work plans and read through where we are in terms of status, I think you'll find that we've made a lot of great progress this year. I feel very confident about where we are on most of our high priority items. I see sort of three groups of tasks that I think about when I look across the city as an organization. The first is, as Barry just took us through in some detail, we continue to have a very robust capital program, and we have some really significant community scale projects that are completed or are being launched, and so we continue to keep those on everyone's radar. I think we would also say that this year was characterized by some really significant work in the planning department on our code, certainly comp plan and some other major pieces. You're going to be hearing tonight some more about the beginning of your work on the critical areas ordinance. And then a third grouping that I see is the work that we do on the staff side and through our community engagement on policy initiatives. So I'll touch on a couple of those things. So using those categories then, I wanted to maybe take tonight to connect you a little bit more with the people who are actually doing these things. You, in this council setting, see the department directors quite often and some of our executive staff, but you don't often get to see the folks who are out actually doing that. And so when we talk about significant capital projects at a community scale, coming forward in the last few years and looking ahead in our CIP. Mark Epstein, for example, has been responsible for the waterfront park redevelopment. He's working on the city dock replacement, and he also led the Manitou Beach waterfront. Those are projects just in this year that we can drive out and see and walk through and experience. Chris Munter is working on the SDO projects that we just talked about tonight. That's a significant piece of work. He's also in charge of planning for the Wyatt Way improvement, which will be our next major Winslow area project, and that will be significant. People maybe don't have it on their radar just yet because it's still in planning phase, but that'll be important as we move into the next few months. And then Patty Jenkins has been working on Olympic Drive. Again, you've seen some of these people because we've had significant discussions about these, but these are the folks that are attached to those initiatives. That second bucket, significant code work, again, these will all be familiar faces to council because we've spent so much of our time on these this year. Jennifer Sutton was our lead for the comp plan update, significant multi-year project that came to completion in the first quarter. She's also led you through the discussion of council's consideration of the business industrial zoning options and has now begun the facilitation of the affordable housing work that the task force is doing. Heather Wright is the lead person in the planning department who's been doing many of our major project reviews in the front half of this year, and she will be somebody who is critical to the process improvements that the department will be looking at in the second half of the year. Christy Carr, who's in the back with us tonight, of course, has been working on the SMP issues and the amendment there and the critical areas ordinance. And these are all major efforts related to the municipal code that when you look at sort of a box on a page in the status report, doesn't necessarily speak to the number of hours and the energy that is actually behind these. That third bucket, community initiatives, a couple of things I wanted to highlight. One is our support and increased work through Amber Richards' position as emergency management coordinator. She is working on a wide range of emergency preparedness tasks, both here in the organization and out in the community, including the AM radio project, a range of training initiatives, the logistics around our emergency operations center, and a lot of neighborhood engagement, which is what we really need in that function. And then Carla Sias, who's the community resource officer in the police department, similarly is doing everything we can to expand the proactive community policing that we know is so important to the other work of that department. Many of you will have participated in National Night Out, which continues to grow year after year. That's something that Carla leads for us. Among the other community initiatives I wanted to highlight this year, Carla came up with the concept and put in place the Cops and Kids Summer Camp, which I understand was a huge success. So again, I just want to sort of put a face and some specifics to what we're doing in these areas. And then maybe take a minute to highlight a couple of different specific examples. In the work plan report, you'll see an overview of the project and priorities we're tracking this year. And some of those are familiar to council, and some of them are maybe things that you've heard about before. We've, of course, talked about accreditation for the police department, but I wanted to show you some of the folks who spent really significant time in their work to complete that effort. And again, that was a multi-year effort that came to fruition this year. At this point, we are now proud to say that we're one of 60 agencies of 260 in the state of Washington that can say that we're accredited. And that was a really significant administrative exercise. A different kind of example is the team you see here. There are personnel here from both Streets and SWIM, but this group of folks took on something that isn't actually on the list that we talk around, but it was a different approach to the work of what's called shoulder pulling, which is where they take material off the side of the road to make sure that the pavement is clear and clean and that there's good clearance on either side. That was a major effort that O&M decided to approach in a different way this year, and they dedicated a really coordinated approach to it. And you'll also see a couple of our folks, John Inch and Mark Bartholomew, who are the mechanics who, my understanding was part of the importance of this project was to keep the equipment working as well as possible. But just as a frame of reference, the staff effort on this in Q2 was over 1,000 hours. They pulled nearly 3,000 tons of equipment, of spoils, off the road. And that number, as a frame of reference, is more than the annual removal that's been done in any of the last 10 years that they've been tracking this. So I say that as an example of, you know, thinking about the work differently, moving our capacity forward and also beginning to address some things that we had to defer previously. And so I think it's important. They think of this as a big success and a way that they did something differently, and I wanted to highlight it for you. It's important also from a preservation standpoint, because that work done well helps to preserve the pavement longer, which saves us money. It improves the roadway drainage, which helps environmentally, and it prevents buildup on the road when we have our ice conditions. So it's a focused effort. It's important for addressing backlog, and it shows us meeting service standards that we previously couldn't meet. Another area I want to highlight is some of our internal services and things, again, thinking about how folks are doing their jobs differently. Gretchen Brown is our GIS specialist, and noteworthy this year is that she installed a new GIS portal that's being used by both staff and the public. It's a better interface and gives a lot more filter functionality. I can speak from personal experience. I had a service provider standing in my yard, and he said, I'm going to check on a buffer, and pulled out his phone and pulled up the GIS, and then went on at some length about how great it was and how he had never been able to use it in the field before. I don't think he knew I worked for the city, but it was really impressive testimony to how the word is getting out that there are these additional resources. Kate Brown is our human resources manager. This year, again, under best management practices, she implemented an online employment application tool that we didn't have previously. And in just the first half of the year, we've used that for 15 job postings, and if to give you a sense of how much efficiency that provides for us, we had a public works administrative position that had over 100 applications. So not only does it help us reach more people, but it helps us process those that level of interest in a way that is actually manageable, as opposed to being very old-fashioned and manual. And then Ken Dunscombe is our budget manager, and I wanted to highlight her work. She has achieved for us the GFOA Outstanding Budget Presentation Award, which is really about communicating your finances with your community, which is something we all care about. She's also done a lot of work for us in OpenGov and priority-based budgeting, and I think you all know that we have those tools. What you may not know is that both of those vendors cite the city of Bainbridge Island quite frequently as a leading implementer of their software. And so we're known for that in their perspective. And Kim's work is one reason why that's so. And I also sort of call that out because Kim is one of the instances where we were actually, with our new position, able to promote from within. And as a small organization, we don't always have career development tracks. And she stepped into the role of budget manager on short notice at a time when the budget was really midstream. And so it's sort of noteworthy how well she has been able to do in the months since. My last example I wanted to highlight is also a project that isn't really on anyone's list, but it's a great indicator of how folks are approaching their work at this point in the organization's growth. Our janitorial contract was up for renewal, and Aaron Claiborne, who is in charge of our facilities operations, determined that a good thing to do would be to undertake an employee survey to see what folks who work in the buildings thought of how the janitorial services were currently being provided, and then used that survey to set up an internal team that would take a coordinated look at needs, and used that multi-departmental team, the folks you see on the right, to develop the scope of work for the new contract, review the bids, and choose the contractor. We've got staff there from police, from court, from public works, from planning, and then also I wanted to call out that once we had the new service provider identified, Ken Taylor, who's our maintenance tech, put in a lot of extra time making that transition smooth, helping the service provider do as well as they could by understanding what our needs were, and also just being very present as we were going through a change that we hadn't experienced in a couple of years. So it's a good example of, we talk about that work plan priority list as being the tip of the iceberg. This is a good example of what happens underneath the surface of the ocean. It's not something that we're really highlighting, but it's great to see that folks of their own volition taking on some innovative ways of doing this. Pulling away from the work plan for a little bit to talk about performance metrics, I just wanted to share a sense of how many people are now helping us with this. We continue, in my mind, to move on a track to grow into performance measurement. I intentionally use the word metrics at this point because I think we're really still mostly focused on collecting workload data. And as we get more sophisticated, we'll move into the kind of measurements that really tell us about efficiency and comparison and benchmarking. But we are making a lot of progress, and these are the folks who have really embraced the idea of being intentional about understanding what we're doing, how much we're doing, and incorporating that measurement component into their daily work. And I certainly appreciate the help with the counting and the trickle-down effect of having them think about their work differently. But I would have to say, as much as I appreciate the help with the counting, it's important to remember that what's really interesting is not the counting, but the actual doing, which is the service delivery underneath that. I'll just end here with a look at, on the left, of course, is our Seahawks fan crew from a Friday last year. The top picture is the new hires from 2017, or from 2016. You can expect the 2017 version of this picture to be probably even larger. And then that bottom picture is really special. That is the folks who last year received their 20-year service recognition for their work with the city. A final note, some of the things we've talked about tonight, and I think you'll see in the remainder of the year, are about capacity. The council made some really important decisions in this budget to increase staffing. And that's not just a money decision. That's really fundamentally about service delivery and doing our work differently. And so I'll encourage you to, as you see projects and discussions come forward, to look for where those choices have increased our capacity. I want to tell you explicitly about what it's meant for me in the work of this mid-year effort. Alan Hugler is a financial analyst. He was formerly half-time, and in this budget, we increased him to full-time. And some of the specific results from that are Alan's key additional time is used to support the Invisio tool that we use to track performance measurement and our work plan priorities. And he's also expanded our use of OpenGov, which has been a very popular way for people to learn about the city's finances on their own. He's also, my understanding is he's spent a lot of his time working on process improvement in the department and helping to look for those places that seem like low-hanging fruit for us. He's really instrumental in continuing our progress on performance measurements, and he's responsible for the report you have in your packet today. I did not do that report for the first time, which freed me up to do work on other things. As an interesting side note to me, Alan graduated from Bainbridge High School in 2005 with two other of our relatively newer employees, Christian Berg in Public Works and Annie Hillier in PCD. And I want to underscore that kind of special connection to the community, but also the way in which we are becoming an attractive employer for folks who bring really fresh and current job skills to their positions. So there's that. And then Kelly List on the right is our this year's management intern from the Evans School of Management. And I highlight that because that's a decision we make to support and fund that program. And this is the fourth year we've done it. And you may have heard me say before that I came into that somewhat skeptical. I knew what the intern would get out of it, but I wasn't as clear what we would get out of it. In this fourth year, I think we've learned how to really make best use of these, of having the benefits of an intern. It's a limited term set of, you know, FTE resource, but it really does help move forward projects with a community impact that would otherwise sit because they're not necessarily critical to service delivery. This year, Kelly's going to be working on the budget and brief. She's going to be supporting the Affordable Housing Task Force, and she's going to be helping move some of our road end website content to a fresher level. She also was extremely helpful and produced the mid-year status report that you have. And again, that's the first time that I did not have to be the hands-on person to produce that document. Quick look ahead to year end. I've mentioned our Invisio tool a couple of times. We had really hoped to have that at a point that your mid-year reporting would be produced by that software, but the reporting function is not quite what it needs to be. We've worked with the developer, and they have received that feedback from other clients and have a plan to roll out improvements in Q3. So we expect very much to have your year-end reporting produced by that. It'll have a little bit different look, but the content will be the same. A major benefit will be that the reporting will be very automated. There is still a good bit of manual work that goes into taking all this information and producing it for you. And it will also then integrate with OpenGov so that people can produce it, can see it on the website more easily, more frequently. It'll be more current. And they also have plans to provide benchmarking functionality next year. And so if we are keeping all of this information inside of Invisio, we expect to eventually be able to use it to look at other cities that are also using that tool. And that's all I have for tonight. Again, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Okay, I had one really small question. I noticed that the amount of time spent on sweeping bike lanes was quite a lot less than prior years, and I Just wondered why.
I can follow up on that. Sometimes it has to do with, you know, staging the other work of the O&M crew, and they may pick up more in the third quarter because they had less in the second quarter. But it's a good question. I'll check on it. Let you know.
So I'm looking in the work plan priorities. In the finance and administrative services, one of the tasks is support assessment of the swim utility, which is, I think, something we talked about last year when we increased the rate, the swim rate. We talked about doing a study. Is that what this is?
I think what that is it reflects, because remember, I try and preserve all of the tasks that we laid out in January, even if we make different decisions along the way. So we always remember what we said we were going to do. And I think my recollection is that in January, there was some discussion about taking up an assessment of the swim utility, and that the council asked the UAC to weigh in on whether that assessment would be worthwhile or not. And so I think the expectation was if that assessment went forward, the finance department would have some work to do to support that. Probably Barry or Ellen can speak to that a little more clearly, or I may have not gotten that correct.
I think that's mostly correct. So we've been discussing that with the UAC for a month or two, and Ellen's been helping with the background information for their consideration. So they have a recommendation, I think, that's about ready to come to council. I'm not sure exactly when. And then, of course, Ellen will be helping with the rate analysis. She's already has helped with the discussion of swim rates, which we're going to take up with the UAC. We started last week, and we have two more meetings in August to hopefully wrap that up to bring to council, of course.
Thank you. So I guess what kind of bothers me about that is that when we were doing the budget, there was a lot of discussion about, and I'm pretty sure we all agreed to undertake this, that there was proposed two increases in the swim rate. We'd do one year, and then it'd bump up again the next year, and we would do a study similar to what was done with the water system. And then it came up again at our retreat, or our advance, which I think was January or February. So it's now August. Something the council wanted to do is now August, and we're waiting for recommendation from the UAC. I have no idea what they're going to recommend. And we're talking again, though, about another a rate analysis for SWIM, but not any kind of study like we talked about, that was more of an operational study.
Right. So that's the council did put that in the budget for 2017, and then after I'm not sure it was after the development of the work plan. It was part of the work plan for the UAC, where the council asked the UAC to evaluate the need and provide a recommendation for that study, whether it should be done or not. And so that's what they've been working on. Morgan might have the reference document on that.
Well, I think maybe one thing that helps to explain is on page 179 of your packet, you have the list of the council's priorities, which is sort of reflects the discussion that you were having about the list you were going to track. And you can see that the second item from the bottom is consider results of a rate study for the sewer utility, and the council request is for the UAC to review the study results before the council considers it. That's sewer. And then the next item is consider results of assessment for the swim utility. And the comment is council requested UAC feedback on the benefits from proposed assessment before staff proceeds with assessment. So I think where that conversation led, which Barry was referring to, is that the council was requesting that the UAC provide their input on whether an assessment would be beneficial before it was actually launched.
Is there any way for you guys to provide, at least to me, because I'm interested, when that decision was made, to have the UAC review it before it was done?
Well, this is the notes from your January 26th council advance.
Okay.
So I'm happy to send that to you, and it probably has minutes, which we can also attach to it as well. But these are the notes that reflect that, and that then came to council on February 21st, so you kind of, you know, checked in on, I think Val drafted these, on whether this, you know, captured what you wanted it to capture.
I think I recall that, yeah.
Okay, but in your packet, if you just want to take a quick glance, it's actually in here for tonight, page 178 and 179, so that might help refresh as well. But I think it might, my only point in connecting the sewer and the swim is I think those two concepts, because they're sort of close together and sound similar, you know, it's easy to kind of conflate them.
Morgan, I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. I wanted to tell you I appreciated your attaching names and faces to efforts. I think we have a very large number of dedicated public employees in our city, and it's great to hear examples of some of the fine work they're doing. So thank you for doing that for us.
Yeah, it was actually a great task for me because I did not know of all the things we talked about here tonight. And so it was nice to see how much folks are doing their work in a certain way. I think it really reflects well on where the organization is in its development at this point.
I too would offer my gratitude for the pictures. Ellen Hugler is a neighbor. He grew up in our neighborhood, and when he got this position, he was so thrilled, and I was too. I really did not know him well enough to know what capability he had, so that's a happy story. Also, you talked about the National Night Out, and it was, I thought, a wonderful event yesterday. And note that it's going to move to Waterfront Park next year. But as I was in the town square, sewer repairs notwithstanding, it was not a bad venue with the stage and all this year. I thought it looked pretty good, but I was imagining how an improvement to that space might work in this kind of an event. So anyway, to Carla and all the others who worked so hard to make it work, I thought it was, we had the beautiful weather, no smoke, and we didn't run out of hot dogs, so it was a good night.
I'll share that.
So Morgan, I'd like to circle back to Deputy Mayor's comments about the performance audit that we're waiting for recommendation from the UAC on. Been a long time, and I hope that we can move that along before we discuss utility rates, because I think we need that information regarding the stormwater utility, given that our rates are higher than, seem to be on the high side, if I remember correctly. And so I'm just kind of emphasizing what Sarah had to say about that.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any public comment? Okay.
Thank you, Council.
Thanks, Morgan. So now we're at the Planning Commission recommendation on critical areas.
Good evening, Council. I'm Christy Carr with the Planning and Community Development Department. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to introduce the Council to the Critical Areas Ordinance update process, as well as a really brief preview of the Planning Commission's recommended draft of the Critical Areas Ordinance. As I think Council is well aware, the Growth Management Act requires that cities periodically review and update their development regulations, including those that relate to critical areas. The city completed a comprehensive review and update of its CAO in 2005, and with the exception of limited revisions in 2007 and 2008, the majority of the rules have been on the books for over a decade. So it's time. The intent of the current update is to address state requirements, including review and incorporation of best available science, update it to support the comprehensive plan that we all work so hard on, address code conflicts and inconsistencies, and improve clarity, consistency, readability, and ease of administration for staff. There really actually isn't an overwhelming amount of best available science or changes to state requirements to consider. And from staff's perspective, the update is really an opportunity for us to revise existing code language and improve the code language, tie together a number of different code sections, and craft a new ordinance to really support the natural resource goals, policies, and guiding principles of the comprehensive plan. The staff memo provides an overview of the Planning Commission's review, which included over 10 meetings between March and June. It was kind of a mad dash in a relatively short amount of time, but the review, I want to assure you, was thoughtful and it was rigorous, and they had a lot of great discussion and deliberation. That said, the Planning Commission draft has known gaps with some work that is left to council due to timing limitations and ongoing updates to other portions of the municipal code that we're still working on. I did want to note that the Planning Commission also identified a need for non-regulatory and programmatic actions to fully implement and ensure the success of the critical areas ordinance. These may include education and outreach materials and activities, a monitoring and adaptive management program, and a watershed or landscape-based scale approach to mitigation. As with the comprehensive plan, the city has missed its state-mandated deadline for the critical areas ordinance update, which was June 30th. The city has provided the Department of Commerce with our schedule for completing our review and update, which for you includes about meeting about every other week between now and mid-October. At this point, I can answer general questions or specific questions you have from the overview of revisions provided in the staff memo. I would also like to hear any specific ideas, issues, or areas of concern you have at this point in the process, and would also appreciate any input you have on data, maps, or other information that you think would make your review go more smoothly.
Do you want to take public comment first? Mike? Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to comment on the critical areas ordinance? Any questions up here?
I have a question.
We talk about being concerned about the land and the environment and everything else. And I would like to know how putting a parking ramp right in the middle of downtown deals with the recommendation from Environmental Protection Agency that came to this island in 2013. In fact, it's out on the internet right now, that requests that the island not be doing those kinds of things because our downtown area is polluted. And I have real concerns when we're talking about building a parking ramp, which is going to even bring more pollution into the downtown area, in an area that right now is quite sacred and doesn't pollute. And I think that's a very important factor for us to be considering.
Any questions from the council?
Well, I don't have questions. I wanted to thank you for your very helpful memorandum. It was a good introduction to this very important topic for me, and I appreciate your proposed schedule. I mean, I like taking it in significant chunks like that and walking through slowly, because as the title of the Critical Areas Ordinance signifies, it's a very important piece, and we need to spend some time on it. So thank you.
Christy, what were the gaps that are left that we need to be maybe paying special attention to?
Sure, that's a good question. And actually, for the most part, those are the ones that were highlighted in blue in your staff memo. So for example, we'll be looking at the Transfer of Development Rights Program, and that may impact our reasonable use exception section of the code, because one of the options for reasonable use is to participate in the TDR program. So we can't really make sure that that section is done until we look at the TDR program. We talked today about the aquifer recharge areas and how that may tie to our vegetation management and also our stormwater regulations. We also haven't looked at code enforcement yet. That's a larger ongoing effort by the city, so that may be something that we need to revisit
once more work is done on that. The other thing is that just due to timing and contracting issues, our geotechnical technical consultant hasn't given us their full review of the proposed revisions. We think we're pretty close, but we may have some points where we need you to pay attention on some more policy related, you could have some options there. I think that might be about it. But again, if you refer to your memo, the staff blue notes are really where to look.
So just wanted to share with the rest of the council that Christy came to our tree meeting today, tree LID meeting, and we had a great conversation about how to integrate tree protections into as part of the critical areas ordinance. And she was very helpful. It's complicated, but we're glad to have Christy there helping us and look forward to more discussion in 2 weeks.
Anything else? Thanks, Christy.
Thank you.
Okay, review of City Council priorities. Doug or Morgan?
Good evening, Council. This is really just an opportunity for you to, as part of the mid-year check-in, to look at the list of items you identified at the beginning of the year and have as little or as much discussion about that as you'd like. I know Mayor Tollefson's not here, but our thinking when we were organizing this agenda was that it would just be appropriate for you to have this in front of you. And as I said, you can either have some discussion or not. It's really just to take you back to the January point of reference.
Anything from the council?
I would just say that based on my review, it's very helpful to have it and as a check-in to see where we are with respect to what we talked about doing earlier in the year. I think we're making good progress and are more or less on track with the priorities we identified. But it serves as a good reminder to focus on some of the areas that aren't quite as far along as we had hoped. But I know that work is underway, so I don't see any alarm bells to be sounded when I look at this.
Is there any public comment? No? Okay. Oh, Ron?
I get the feeling tonight everybody wants to get out of here before 9 o'clock. Probably prefer I didn't speak. But the very last item on here, of course, is an item that I've brought up recently, and it's coordinate community debt bond plans for other taxing jurisdictions is how it's worded here. And, of course, it would include not just others but also the city. And the note on the right says, role of the council with a question mark. And I just like to say that I think it definitely is a role for the council. And I looked in the comp plan, and there's a couple things in there that I think give us a little direction. Guiding policy 3.2 states, make budget decisions that adequately consider the well-being of all island residents, with the goal of providing opportunities to be contributing members of the community, and that might have something to do with affordability of housing as it pertains to taxes, property taxes, which are hitting people hard, especially going to see that pressure increased when we start the new property tax increase that's part of the McCleary funding. This funding for schools kicks in. Policy HO 2.1 talks about housing report, that I think it's a biennial housing report. And number 12 is what is an item that would be addressed in the housing report is an analysis of how property taxes impact housing affordability. And of course, there's the joint resolution that probably not a lot of people don't know about, that was a joint resolution of the four major taxing districts, including the city, of course, from 2004. It's Joint Resolution 2004-06. If anybody would like to see that, I'm sure that Christine would be happy to provide it, or you can email me. I have a copy of it. I'd be glad to send out. And it it commits those four taxing districts to transparency when it comes to funding requests. I think it falls a little bit short in that it commits all the taxing districts to prepare annual reports specifically regarding their projects, their bond measures, and how they may impact voters. So I think there's ample things that would say, yes, it is the role of the council to show some leadership on regarding transparency for voters and citizens in regards to community debt and how it impacts our property taxes and affordability on the island.
Anything else?
Yeah. about that last topic, who is actually our city representative to that group, IGWIG, or whatever it's called? It's the mayor.
The mayor and each organization has a representative that is an elected member, and then the chief executive of each entity serves on that task force.
And that's, is it required in that ordinance that it's our mayor, or is that just kind of our practice?
Remember, you would think it would be, but
we had it in front of us last week, but I don't have it in front of me right now.
Yeah. We can check on that. I don't remember for sure.
Where I'm going is this. We have a member of this council who has a lot of energy around this, and I would be open to the idea of having that member of our council join that body and have this discussion with them. I'm not making a motion, but I'm just raising that point.
Maybe someone can come back to us with whether that's possible. You don't mean replace Val, you just mean in addition to the mayor.
Ms. Cole, do you really think that's a good idea? To send me to an IGWIG meeting? You think about it.
I don't want to comment on any like personal things. I just think you raise good issues. We do have this ordinance. It does say that we are supposed to be doing this, and if they're not doing it, then I would appreciate an effort to get them to do it.
Well, I personally think we do need to rededicate ourselves and encourage the other taxing jurisdictions on the island to rededicate themselves to IGWIG's important function. And we talked about that last week, and I think Val has undertaken to do that. But I do think it's important that it be the mayor who speaks for the council. That's the role of the mayor. It should be the senior representative of each of the other taxing jurisdictions, because I think that signifies how important the role is of IGWIG to coordinate intergovernmental matters on the island, taxes being among the most important. So I think the system in place, as I've said before, I was on the school board in the early 2000s and saw IGWIG work well at that time. School board is often the big gorilla in the room when it comes to tax proposals, and it at that time interacted with the city and the fire department, the fire district rather, and the parks district, and we need to get back to doing that. And we got charts, and the city council should get charts that showed all the various taxes, when they expire, so that you can see and try to keep things as level as possible. But I think Val is on it from what I've heard.
Wayne?
I would just note a couple of things. One, the library district, which is not one of the four named, but also we pay, is going to put on the ballot. Again, they failed in their last attempt, but they're going to put a ballot for a is it 8 cents per thousand? Do you remember what it is? But it's already going forward. It'll be on November, I believe. Yeah, November ballot. So that's coming up. And I was not aware that that was being discussed, but I know that it has come up from time to time. So to the extent there's a way to liaison with the regional library district would be helpful as well.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I happen to be acquainted with a member of the library board and saw him after I saw that item in the paper and asked whether they had coordinated with IGWIC at all, and he said yes, they presented to IGWIC.
Thank you.
Also, I don't remember us discussing this last week or whenever we last discussed this, but I understand from that discussion that all of the jurisdictions in there are not kind of upholding the agreement of presenting this kind of report or analysis early in each year. What about the city? Are we doing our part? Are we presenting our report to all of them?
So basically the discussions at IGWIG end up really focused on the potential, what the plans are in the coming year to put something on the ballot. And I have to tell you, the other taxing jurisdictions are really reluctant to have those discussions early on in that forum because they haven't made decisions yet. It's, they're thinking about it, but it's in a public forum where, one or two members of their agency are there. And, there haven't been those discussions with their full bodies yet to make final decisions, to have their own public meetings and public hearings. So it's a difficult arrangement for these organizations to have those kinds of discussions and share that information.
But are we? Are we doing our part?
Yes, we've shared with them that when we had the ballot measure for the police facility a couple years ago, we were sharing with them that we were planning to do that. And we've continued to update them that we are not looking at a ballot measure for the new police facility right now. And that we are looking at a possible infrastructure measure sometime next year. But, that's about the extent of the conversation.
I don't have that ordinance in front of me, or I don't know if it's an ordinance, whatever it is. But I seem to remember it saying that every jurisdiction was required to present a report to all the other jurisdictions. I don't know if it's January or early in the year or something. And I assume those reports were then compiled into the charts and stuff that you said you saw when you were involved. And that seems like a good idea to me. It seems like what we're supposed to be doing. And we want them to start doing that and doing what they said they would do under this. And it'd be hard to ask them to start doing that if we're not doing that. So I'm just really wondering if we're providing that report that calls for us to provide.
It's a small, it isn't a they, it's a we. We're one leg of the table. So we all have this responsibility. So your point is well made in that regard, that we ought to at least be satisfied that we're doing it. And then how we see the others are at least admitting they may not be, or there's constraints, as Doug has suggested. Trying to see if I can find that in my document.
I'd like to read the relevant section from the Joint Resolution 200406, Section D, so that island voters can have a sense of what their proposed total tax contributions are likely to be, even though property tax levy elections may be held separately. Subsection 1, taxing authorities will prepare financial planning information that can be published in January as a document that by design and intent permits island voters to have a comprehensive view of recent, past, current, and projected property tax forecasts. So that's the relevant language there that's important.
I believe the next IGWIG meeting is coming up this month, and I think this year the fire district is hosting those meetings and the lead agency, so I'll ask the fire chief to have this discussion on the agenda.
Okay, anything for the good of the order? Nothing? I guess we're adjourned.